For 200 years since they invaded Aboriginal land.
The land belongs to us. We belong to the land.
Government is trying to take away from us.
Don't call me a problem. I am not the problem. I have never left my country, nor have I ceded any part of it.
Let's talk. Triple A's flagship program that continues to elevate the diverse voices of First Nations people across the country. Centered around the unceded sovereignty of First Nations people in this country, honouring the history with a solutions-based focus on the future. With your host, Pomeroy journalist, Danny Tierce Johnson.
Yama, hello and welcome to Let's Talk. I'm your host, Danny Tierce Johnson, Pomeroy journalist from Moree, New South Wales. I'd like to start the show by acknowledging country. I acknowledge the traditional owners from the lands that we broadcast from, and I extend that greeting all across this beautiful black nation of ours today to wherever you're listening, your elders past and present. Well, today on the show, we're talking about politics. Changes of government are remarkably rare in Australian politics. It has only happened 8 times since the end of World War II. So yesterday's first sitting of the 47th Parliament of Australia and of the new Albanese government is a pretty significant occasion. After 9 years of coalition rule, Labor is taking the reins in Parliament and planning a fast start to its legislative agenda. But more than the government has just changed. There are more Greens and more Independents who have come to Parliament promising to bring a different kind of politics. We'll see if that happens or not. Yesterday, Governor-General David Hurley opened the 47th Parliament with a big speech from the Labor Party outlining their plans for the next 3 years. To discuss this today, Les Malzer is from the Batchelor Gubbi Gubbi Peoples in southeast Queensland. Les is the former co-chair of the National Congress of Australia's First People and has extensive experience in campaigning for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander rights and has represented the community interests at local, state, national, international levels. Uncle Les, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dana. Yama wanya to everybody out there from, Batchelor Gubbi Gubbi peoples, and particularly acknowledge the true owners of the land, which are the Aboriginal people, and in this area, the traditional owners of the Turrbal and Yuggera peoples of this area. So good morning to all the listeners.
Yeah, thanks for coming in, Anka. I value your political opinion here on Let's Talk. You've done so much in your career in terms of politics and representing our mob. First of all, I just want to get your thoughts on I know you don't like the numbers, I was saying earlier, but, you know, it is a big occasion. We do have a new parliament, and with that we do have a host of new senators from all walks of life. What were your thoughts on yesterday?
A very significant day, I think. It'd be obviously for what has happened as a result of the elections, the change of government and so on. And I think that we are coming into, I think, progressive times when we can look at reforms. And the most important thing is that we get the right reforms. As you have been doing, Danny, I've also been watching very closely what's been coming out with the change of politics and hoping that it goes in the right direction. But the most interesting, I think, at this point for everyone, for all of our mob, is that this is the era of self-determination being exercised. So we have to be making the decisions. We have to be setting the directions and so on. So it's good to see that we've got a government in there that wants to hear from Aboriginal people and wants to head in the right directions. But I think they still have to do a few more things to deal with that. I mean, the gap is so wide now between what goes on at, let's say, the Canberra bubble, what goes on, and what's happening in our communities. I mean, it's a stark difference still. But now's the time for us to say, you know, we don't want to want our voice to be heard. We want to be making the decisions.
Yeah, I left work yesterday. I've been going home to look after my boy, side note. But I went home to go watch the Attorney General's speech because it does outline their vision for the next 3 years. And it was the first time I've ever seen a speech from an Attorney General to open a parliament where there's such a, I guess, an emphasis and an importance on Aboriginal politics, Aboriginal affairs. The senators were all given, standing ovations yesterday. The Aboriginal senators were particularly welcomed by the Attorney General. And so there's a lot of, I don't know, people are feeling refreshed and a little bit hopeful about the next 3 years. They have announced the referendum on the voice to Parliament within the first 3 years, among other issues such as, you know, they talked about deaths in custody. in Parliament yesterday. They talked about reducing the incarceration rate, and I just, I was just sitting out at home yesterday going, wow, this is, you know, it's a lot of pomp and a lot of talk. But I'm just wondering, you know, because you've been around so long and done so much, is this change feel real to you, or is it just another phase that we go through as Aboriginal people?
Look, well, certainly I have to say we're in another phase, but I don't want to belittle that because I think it is, as I said before, I think we're looking at reform in the politics in Australia, and particularly with Aboriginal people being actually on the list. You know, normally we're not off the list in some on the second page and things like that. And we're on the list, we're high up on the agenda, and that's great. But let me say something about the Attorney General. I'm a big fan of Mark Dreyfus. He's only was the Attorney General previously in government for a short period of time, but he did wonderful things. He made four reforms, I think. This was just after the referendum on whether we would have a Charter of Human Rights, which didn't succeed. But he came up with four particular reforms in the human rights era, including creating this Parliamentary Joint Committee on Human Rights, which Australia has never had before, and so on. So I'm hoping that Mark Dreyfus, as the Attorney General, will continue to be the sort of Attorney General we've seen in the past. And something that probably nobody notices because he doesn't really advertise it, but he started his career as a field officer with the Northern Land Council.
Oh, did he?
So he actually has connection with Aboriginal people. He knows what it's like to be at that end because, you know, in the Northern Territory, you can't avoid the black and white issues up there.
Oh, no.
It's just every day in visually and in the experience. So he's been very well grounded, but he also is not someone who sits back and wears the title. He's someone that sees that it's a job and gets the job done. So, and from our organisation, the Foundation for Aboriginal and Islander Research Action, or FARA, we've already sought an appointment with the Attorney General to talk to him about what we think are some priorities that need to be done on that. But so, yes, I think yesterday's opening, very, very significant. I think they're painting the walls clearly about what they're going to do, what they're going to achieve. And I heard the Prime Minister also talking about that in relation to his commitment to climate change and how they're going to try and get this bill through very early in the Parliament and so on. So there are no nonsense Parliament. And also, I give just as much credit to the independents that have got in because they want to see a parliament of the peoples and want to see it operate that way. So this is good. Yeah. I'm pleased.
Yeah, it's great to see a lot more sisters in parliament and a lot more, you know, people of colour. It's quite refreshing, but it's still not truly reflective of who we are as an Australian society, that's for sure. But, Uncle, I do want to ask around the voice to Parliament and the announcement around that, that we'll go to referendum in the first term. You know, we sort of knew this was coming, but it sort of smacked me in the face yesterday of how much work and how important black media is going to become in terms of the messaging of the voice to Parliament and what's going on around that. But what did you think around the announcement of the voice to Parliament, and how hopeful are you that any of this will go ahead?
Well, I've made it no secret on my Facebook pages. Mm-hmm. I've made it quite clear that a voice to Parliament is not a priority and probably will not deliver. It will leave us in pretty much the same powerless state. But let me add to that by saying that if a referendum is held, and I'd like to come back to the referendum, and a voice to Parliament is created in the Constitution, this is not a bad thing. It can't be a bad thing. Mm. But at the same time, the thing that makes me so reserved and talking a lot about this issue is about a failed referendum. Mm. And that's what worries me most, is that when the government, because I'm with a group nationally, we had a hookup with Senator Dodson after the Labor government was elected to say, where are you going to go? What's the issues here? And so on.
Yep.
He made it very clear that there are these list of issues they've got to sort out in going to a referendum, and we talked through those. I don't know how much you'd like to get on detail of that, but the point being that a referendum is a risky proposition, as everybody knows, I think. 8 successful ones out of 44 attempts.
Yep.
that the people promoting the referendum, the Voice to Parliament, point to the 1967 referendum, but this is not the 1967 referendum,
no.
Which was essentially about let's remove racism from Australia by allowing Aboriginal people
to vote.
Actually a little bit more than that, but it basically is what Whitlam used to take Commonwealth control of Aboriginal affairs.
Yep.
As you and I both know, depending on which side of the border you stood, you had different status. Mm. Some places they could lock you up for being black, and other places you'd be living in fringe camps and things like that. The 67 referendum was a different issue, and that's part of what we've been advocating. My point has been the expert panel presenting us report back in 2012 hit the right spot, because I'm confident that referendum would have succeeded, which was to prevent parliaments from making racist laws.
Mm.
And I think almost at least 90% of Australians, if you ask them the question, they'll say, yeah, there shouldn't be any racism in what we do and how the parliaments make laws and so on. But when you get things like the Northern Territory intervention, which thankfully is now just expired.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, yeah. Or the Queensland Liquor Act, which is still in place. And the Queensland government has good intentions. They're doing a lot of work behind that legislation, but the legislation is still discriminatory. The Native Title Act, there's been a number of amendments which have been racist in that. The Heritage Protection is essentially racist legislation because it fails to work, so it's not meeting the requirements for what we call special measures to deal with disadvantage. Mm. It's actually creating disadvantage. So these things are there, and there's still laws being made in parliaments at the federal and state levels, but it's allowed under the Racial Discrimination Act passed in Australia. And that's something we want to take up with the Attorney General, Mark Dreyfus,
yep.
about please put down criteria for what are special measures and non-discrimination to benefit people, particularly Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. And that's what we wanted the referendum to be about, to put in a provision to say no parliaments can make laws based upon racial discrimination or based upon race.
Mm.
And that was showing 75% support in polling that we were doing from the community. And if that was in the constitution, it would then allow for the courts to then decide for themselves whether or not certain legislation being passed, like the ones that I've mentioned, meet the requirements or don't meet the requirements. Now, the courts, it's up to the government to whether they set criteria for special measures or whether they allow the courts to determine what those criteria are.
Mm.
But something needs to be done, and that's what we're hoping will be the message to this government, that they will look to special measures provisions and continue in the direction that Mark Dreyfus wants to take human rights in Australia.
Yeah. It's going to be a really interesting time as we go, forward through the next 3 years. And I'm just wondering, do you know the processes to set up a referendum and how they, I guess, land on the final questions that they ask the Australian public? Because, what's this question going to be in 3 years' time? Do we want to enshrine voice to Parliament or to the Constitution? Or they're going to have these questions that we're going to have to try and explain to the Australian public and to our people.
And this is the issue that Senator Dodson mentioned to us when we were having the discussion with him. Now, between Senator Dodson, Minister Linda Burney, and Assistant Minister Malandiri McCarthy, along with the Aboriginal members that have been elected to the Parliament, like Marion Scrimshaw,
yep.
for example, and West Australia, that they are committing at the moment to say what should the question be in the referendum and how will that affect it, because it leads to then what are the words that go into the Constitution. Mm. So it's not what's in the referendum. It's not those words that go into the Constitution. It's the intent of those words. So they've got to try and look at something that will lead to the right form of words in the Constitution.
Yeah.
And more importantly, they'll want those words in the Constitution to have tangible benefit, not just simple things that can be ignored by the governments of the day. So they're the things that they are tossing around.
Is that the job of the Indigenous Caucus within Federal Parliament to, I guess, try and come up with a number of questions or proposals around what to be asked in the referendum, and how do you make that palatable to the Australian public?
Look, I wouldn't say it's the job because that sort of thing is up to how portfolios are allocated, but it certainly is, I think, the direction and the responsibility that they're trying to take. Mm. I mean, the Aboriginal members of Parliament, and I'm not talking about political persuasions, you know, really want to have the right things happen in that, and they've got to try and tackle it. And, of course, there is resistance. You probably are aware of that. I might have talked about that previously on the program from Aboriginal people who talk about the issue of sovereignty being affected by constitutional change. And I think there's got to be education on that issue of sovereignty. Does it get affected? Does it not?
And that's the big question everyone raised yesterday when they announced that they will be going to a referendum in the first term. It's like, where is treaty sitting? You know, there's so many, and, you know, the Greens have proposed treaty legislation. I had Yvonne Weldon on the other week who wanted treaty absolutely first because there's a big mob down in Sydney and on the East Coast. I think they want treaty first. And these are, you know, these are people in politics and in various parties with their own, you know, ideologies. But where does the treaty sit in all this now, and where does sovereignty sit?
Well, this national alliance group that we've been having discussions on since the change of government was discussing that very issue about treaty as the priority. Mm-hmm. The people in the group are not really interested about details of referenda. Mm-hmm. They want to see how a treaty works and so on. And so they're focusing on that. That was part of our discussions with Senator Dodson. I've invited I'm trying to think of her last name, Lydia Thorpe. Senator Thorpe. We've invited Senator Lydia Thorpe to talk with our group and talk about where the Greens want to go, because that's their policy is treaty first.
Yeah, so they are more powerful than ever, the Greens. They are, you know, with the numbers that they have, and I guess with the climate change deals being done, they're in quite a box seat to affect change.
Yeah, and there's a lot of public support out there for treaty. The state governments, Victoria and Queensland, Northern Territory, and even New South Wales, South Australia, and I think even West Australia, are talking about having something at a state-based level.
Yeah, because on that, because you know, on the East Coast, all the states are going through treaty processes at various different stages now. But obviously, Victoria being quite far ahead with the UROC Commission. New South Wales and Queensland are following suit. So how does that work in federal if we're all on a different page?
Which is, I think, something that the federal Labor government has to deal with. How do they coordinate and pull all this together? That's something that I think an answer is yet to come up with, but I'm quite sure that that is up on their agenda as well, along with the referendum on a voice and so on. And this is what the government has stressed, full implementation of the statement from the heart. And there's actually four things in there, not three things. The first one that you read in the first couple of paragraphs is about we continue to have our sovereign identity that existed since before colonisation. Mm. They're saying nothing has happened to interfere with our sovereign identity. So that was the first thing, was a statement of sovereign identity. The second thing, when there was a voice to Parliament, then they talked about truth and justice through a Makarrata Commission as the third and fourth issues. So, and I'm sure they'll come up as well very early in this term of government as about truth and justice and commission.
Yeah.
So I think we can say these things are on the table. They will get airing. They will be strongly supported, I hope, also from independents and Greens with the Labor government. But there is a warning in all of this, and that is that are these issues going into committee, which is the too hard basket? That is, okay, well, we can't really do anything about it now, so let's start a process. Does the Victorian legislation do that? Because they're basically not negotiating anything to do with what would be in a treaty until, I think, 2030 or 2032, somewhere around there. So for the time up until then, they're just simply talking about process. And same in Queensland. Queensland will make an announcement very soon. You might be able to next week, if they make it early enough, and report that on your program about what Queensland
scoop
is making.
Scoop.
I've heard rumours, but I don't want to say what those rumours are because I don't know.
Tell me after the show.
I don't know if they're factual, but the point is there that from our point of view as First Peoples, we have to be careful that we're not putting ourselves on a conveyor belt to nowhere into the dark future. And one of the things I'm doing, which I can do myself because of this is my 50th year working in Aboriginal Affairs since I started, and it's 50 years since Gough Whitlam. And I think I might have mentioned that previously on the program, that where are we at 50 years on, what have we looked at, and so on. I'm going to write something on that very, very soon, talking about there's these things that have started off but had failed, like the national land rights legislation under the when the Hawke government came in 83. It promised that, and it promised the compact, his word for a treaty.
A compact.
Yeah. And then we had later in the term, we had the in 1991, the creation of the Council for Aboriginal Reconciliation, which is talking about 2001 having reforms, which included the reforms that came from that council, was for a treaty to be looked at and negotiated. Where did that go? You know, all these things disappeared into the ether. So what we've seen is these things that have been started and that never got completed. And in many cases, we're exactly where we were when we started it back there. So we're just as close to national land rights legislation now. In fact, we were closer then in 1983-84 than we are now.
We've actually gone backwards in 40 years.
But that's all of the reforms. What is there that we can hold on to? Even, you know, I'm just pulling things out of the bag here, but, you know, look at the Royal Commission Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, 1991 that was put in.
Yeah.
That's, what, 31 years? And we have more people going into prison now. One thing for the Attorney-General to deal with is about the age of criminal responsibility, which, you know, was young as 12, 13. The previous government were talking about raising it to age 14, but it should be in international terms at the age 15. So I'm hoping that the Attorney-General, in meeting with the estate counterparts, will agree to make the age of criminal responsibility to be age 15. Now, this poses big problems in the system, but those problems have to be tackled.
Yeah. I mean, the Governor-General, sorry, I called him the Attorney-General before, my mistake, people, sorry out there, but the Governor-General, David Hurley, and, you know, it wasn't his speech, it was written by the Labor Party, the opening address yesterday, but they raised that in, you know, as one of their main priorities was deaths in custody and the reducing the Indigenous incarceration rate. And I just like, okay, that's great to say, you know, they're talking the talk out here, but are they going to walk the walk? How are they going to do it? Because to reduce the Indigenous incarceration rate, you have to change the police. You have to change the policing across the country because we know that, you know, it's not the best that people at high school don't go into the police. They go into other areas in life.
Yeah.
We often know that it's, you know.
Can I pick up a point there? We don't have to change police. We have to standardise policing so that black and white are policed the same way.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be people, I'm writing about this, about alcoholism, that there are laws in place to deal with alcoholism. You don't have to create another law to deal with Aboriginal people and alcohol. In fact, that doesn't work because the answers there are more policemen, more imposition, when in fact the dysfunction requires remedies. And, you know, and we're talking about education, housing, you know, poverty, all these sorts of things. That's where the problems that occur with alcohol should be dealt with. But if someone's drunk in the street or if they're domestic violence and so on, yes, arrest them, you know, because it's not tolerated for anyone, black or white. But at the same time, for Aboriginal people, there's got to be this other program which takes precedent over the police coming in.
Yeah.
You know, that's saying, okay, we're trying to fix up this community that have been segregated, like Palm Island, for example, and has to deal with that sort of problem from the history.
Acacia Ridge.
These are historical problems that won't go away with a piece of legislation.
Yeah.
They are things that have to get in there right down deep and, you know, I've said it before, I'll say it every time, empowerment. You've got to make those people feel, well, look, government's not deciding what will happen, you're deciding what will happen. But every time now, even now, to this very day, it's government that's deciding what things will happen. Now, that's saying a good thing for a voice in Parliament, because a voice in Parliament can impact on those areas, but the problem we have, when there's changes of government, the government doesn't always listen. You know, we've had voices, I think, for 60% of these last 50 years, four different attempts at national representative bodies speaking from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. But if they don't get listened to, you know, they get marginalised and that will happen even if it gets into the Constitution.
Were you ever involved in the Indigenous Advisory Group that was handpicked?
You're talking about in this recent years?
Yeah.
No, and I wouldn't pick myself for those advisory groups.
Remember, they were sort of the, you know, under the Liberal government, particularly I think it was Abbott sort of started that.
You're talking about a number of groups.
Yeah.
Because there was the consultation which had come out of the idea from, I think, Noel Pearson and a few others to have these national $18 million consultations which yielded the statement from the heart. Yes, I was involved with those at national level meetings. I had an alternative voice, but, you know, I wasn't being listened to and it came out to something that I didn't agree with.
And Labor, could we see a body like National Congress come back?
Well, you know, that's one of the things that I would put to Minister Burney. I would say, why wouldn't you support National Congress to be reinstated? If the if the company is still there, it's a private company owned by Aboriginal people, at the moment has debts of about $250,000. Mm-hmm. The previous government refused to pay out those debts so Congress could start. The $5 million that had been promised by a Labor government to that organisation was withdrawn from the budget by the Abbott government when they got in. So for a meagre amount of $250,000, the government could bring that out of the archives that Congress was put into. They can start a process where in 6 months people can elect the representatives to there at the national level. And at least while this issue of a voice, a referendum and so on, putting in the Constitution is being debated, there is a national body that is getting up and speaking on behalf of the rights of the Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander peoples. That would be my preference. But for politics, it's a little of the view of, look, we went there in the past, it didn't work, we're not going back there and do that again. They don't like to do that in politics, of revisit things that didn't succeed previously.
Like the Liberal Party.
Yeah.
Or Labor Party.
So, but I would say on this program, I believe Congress should be reinstated immediately to enable itself to participate in the way that this government is operating.
Yeah, well, I thought in terms of, you know, I'm just thinking out loud here, but I just thought in terms of the voice to Parliament, the referendum, you know, climate change, all these things going on, that a peak body, someone like National Congress, could be a good, you know, could be a good body for us mob to have a voice to talk to, first of all.
Exactly.
Because, you know, it's very, you know, in the past we've had the Recognise campaign, you've had the Referendum Council, we've had all these different groups, and they don't engage with our people in the communities, and they're seen as quite polarising bodies.
Yep.
Whereas National Congress, even though it didn't have a great big membership, it was still as a bit of a neutral place where you could go and have a chat and you could find out about politics, and then they'd take it to the federal government and have a crack.
Exactly. And there's two things about it. One is that those people would be chosen by Aboriginal people, not by the minister or the government or state governments and so on, as they are at the moment. And secondly, that it would bring some awareness and unity. It'll make sure the information gets out to people, important information, and they can reason for themselves. But it can also help unite those voices, because at the moment there is no unity in the voices, and this is where I think the sovereignty argument is going to be a real threat to the referendum, because it's going to confuse the white population, who essentially have the numbers for a referendum. And if they're confused, they may go cautious and they may say, no, let's not change anything.
I think that's a really good point. We saw it out at Uluru. You know, we're only 3%, but geez, we're a big, loud 3% when we want to be, right? And so I'm thinking the same thing, is that because of the, you know, the push towards a voice and almost the disregard, or the, you know, let's just forget about treaty discussion or sovereignty discussion for the moment, that will really galvanise some of our people, because they find it really offensive that that's just off the table, and they will make some noise. And they will get into white Australia and make that noise. And I just think it could be a real threat to the voice to Parliament and to the referendum.
I absolutely agree, but I also want to add is that they won't necessarily be wrong. And this is the whole thing, is that just because there's people who dissent, you don't dismiss that and cut it off, because sometimes there is information and there is correctness in what people are saying.
Yeah, and my generation, we grew up with the notion of treaty. That's all we knew. That's all we heard.
Yes.
That was the Yachty Indy song.
Yes.
And that was, you know, 1988, sorry.
Yep.
We've been yelling treaty since then, and now it's just off the table. And so for a lot of us who grew up with the treaty, because we see a treaty as equality. We see as treaty as being equal, and we see around the world what treaties do for more. Yeah. I've been to New Zealand, I've been to Canada, I've been to America. Yeah. They got it far better than we've got it in terms of language, in terms of culture, in terms of funding, because they have a treaty.
Yep. I agree with you absolutely, but a word of caution here, Danny, is that a treaty is a concept.
Yep.
But what's important is what is the content. And you've heard me say this before. We have been making agreements with government for two decades now, particularly native title agreements and so on. People are not happy with those agreements. They're one-sided and so on. And I think this is something Mick Dodson mentioned while he was the Treaty Commissioner in Northern Territory. He said it has to start with two provisions. One is that the rights of Indigenous peoples are legislated into Australia, they're in law. Mm-hmm. And the second one is that we come to the table as a sovereign entity. We don't have the government saying, you know, you have to listen to us, it's our way or the highway, or, you know, we're not going to agree to that, so that's off the table. Mm. It's got to be the fact that we're sitting at the table as equals and we can negotiate as two equals. And I would dare say, this thing is another conversation, could take weeks, but I would dare say that what we want at the beginning of a treaty and things, we might look at something and say, that looks like a good agreement. A year later, we'd probably look at that and say, look, there are problems here. We should have negotiated stronger in this area. We should have avoided that area. So the dynamics of getting agreement is important. And that's why I want to see the discussions of a content of a treaty happening now rather than being left for 10 years and therefore in the too hard basket. When it's in the too hard basket, it doesn't give a conclusion. It doesn't commit people to anything. So we've really got to be discussing content of a treaty and what it'll achieve. And we don't necessarily need a treaty to get that content. We can get it other ways besides a document where signatures go on the bottom of the page.
Yeah.
And in the UN, with the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, we talked about constructive agreements. So it's pretty much a broader thing, but it includes treaty in there. So treaties and other constructive arrangements.
Yeah.
And what are those constructive arrangements? How they come together? Are they dynamic? Can they be changed as people learn and get a different experience and that sort of thing? And that's the real challenge. And that's what I think we have to educate ourselves on now, not wait until 2030 and then say, well, let's talk about this.
Yeah, you know? And that'll be pushed aside because we'll just be talking about the Olympics in 2032 anyway. And, you know, and people, you know, like your Tony McAvoy's of the world have been talking about the content in treaties.
Yes.
You know, with the British Columbia 8 model and things like that that they're trying to bring to Victoria and whatnot.
And here's a question. Will Queensland still be talking about treaty after the Olympics have been held in Brisbane?
No.
You know, because up until then, they've got the previous experience of the protests over the Commonwealth Games in Brisbane, you know. So they want to get that off the table. So let's start a talk that'll last at least until 2032 and then we can get on with the Olympic Games.
Yeah.
Where's our Cultural Heritage Centre? I've asked that before. Where is it in Brisbane?
Yeah, no.
In Queensland?
I don't know. Yeah. Stradbroke Island?
I don't know. It's missing.
But, yeah, it certainly does. And that's on the East Coast. That's in the capital cities. It's the same in Sydney. You can't see any culture in the city, you know.
Yeah.
You go to Redfern, you can't see any blackfellas anymore, you know. So, you know, gentrification is real. And before we close out, I just want to talk to you about climate change.
Yep.
Because for the first time, we are seeing a real emphasis on climate change. We're seeing the Greens, as I said earlier, more powerful than ever in terms of their lobbying around climate change. What are your thoughts on climate change in Australia, particularly what's happened up in the Great Barrier Reef? Saibai Island goes under every king tide. Droughts, bushfires, floods, you know, we've been through it in the last couple of years. Things have to change.
Absolutely. I've tended to leave climate change to another group of people to deal with because of the human rights issues I'm bringing up have been occupying me full time. But let me clearly say, first,
I sort of see them as intertwined.
They're intertwined, of course. And that's what I was going to say, is that this is an issue not only for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Australia, but particularly for Indigenous peoples of the Pacific, because a lot of people lose their nations over this issue of climate change, and they're Indigenous, supposedly having the same rights all around the region, and it's threatening everywhere, and it should be our concern. But for us in Australia, I mean, the lessons that we already have from climate change is that Indigenous people should be managing their lands, territories, because it leads to better, pristine environments. Mm. And that's the first thing. In Australia, are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people really managing their environment? Their answer is no. They might get on a committee of one person in 30 to talk about environment. That's what happens in Fraser Island and so on. But that's not managing the environment. That's simply being a token representation. And a lot of Indigenous territories can be lost. But the real value is that Indigenous knowledge and input into management of the territories will lead to more positive results on climate change. Mm. I mean, are we going to keep on knocking down trees the way we're knocking down? Are we going to continue to deal with urban sprawl and so on, the ways that we deal at the moment where more petrol's being used and things like that? And that's where the Indigenous voice coming from a particular direction, which is, let's call it, caretakers of the natural environment all around the world, Indigenous populations. This is where all the rainforests have been continued and the natural environment has been promoted and protected for thousands of years. So very, very important. In Australia, we don't have the structure to deal with climate change. I'm pleased to see that under the EPBC Act, Environment Protection Biodiversity Act, they're re-establishing the Indigenous Advisory Committee in that legislation. It's still only an advisory committee. As most advisory committees in government are, they sit in a corner, have their own secretary sitting outside the door.
Like a book on a bookshelf.
Marginalised off from the rest of the department and decision-making. But they're being re-established. There's some good people, I think, being considered for that committee. And hopefully that will be a place that will elevate discussions about climate change within government coming from that department. That's the environmental area, which I think, if I remember correctly, comes under Tanya Plibersek as the minister. So I think that's an encouraging thing. And a lot of the results in the communities with traditional owners connected to the territories is seeing things happen, but they're under-resourced, you know, that they're still temporary. They might get programmed for 12 months and so on, but no long-term arrangements to make sure that we're continuing to care for country the way that we were meant to be. Instead of making us into entrepreneurs and creating international businesses, help us to care for country. It's going to cost because we can't generate our own wealth. We have to rely upon wealth that's generated from our resources in order to do the tasks that we do as Indigenous peoples.
Yeah, well said on that one, Unc. Just before we close out, we've got a few minutes left here, but I guess, what's your thoughts on the next 3 years? Like I said, you've been working Aboriginal affairs on the front line for 50 years. We have seen a monumental shift in the last 5 years towards Aboriginal affairs and Torres Strait Islander affairs. There's a sense of excitement, a sense of hope. Some people might be pessimistic. But I just wonder how you're feeling over the next 3 years and what your priorities are.
Yes, and definitely I have been giving a lot of thought to this. One chance of being retired means you get to sit back and look and reflect on everything, and that's exactly what I've been doing. I would say this. First thing, the NAIDOC theme impressed me no end, you know, which at the end, you know, because at the end of it all says stand up, you know, and be heard sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's what's needed.
There's a little bit. Activists have been doing that since, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think that everybody who's Aboriginal, if you're Aboriginal, the first thing you say, oh, are you an activist? Are you an activist Aboriginal person, or are you someone that sits down and say, what happened? You know, which is a little bit of an anecdote. That's something that was said to me by Sid Jackson, one of the famous Aboriginal footballers in the AFL or the VFL at the time. His coach said to him, there are three type of people in the world. There's the people who make things happen. There's people who sit back and watch things happen, and then there's the people who say, what happened? Well, let's not be in those last two categories. Let's be the people that make things happen. Let's all be Aboriginal and be activists. That's our role as being a black fella. It's not because my grandmother or so on was Aboriginal on the birth certificate. It's because I am actively pushing for Aboriginal traditional connection to country and what we stand for in the world values as Indigenous people. So, so for the next 3 years, people get active, be involved, talk to your local members, as chances are your local member's going to be very attuned to the changes that are going on, particularly in the federal politics and so on. So be active And I think watch very closely what's happening during this first year, because that's where the roadwork will be formed for what happens over 3 years.
Yeah, it's going to be certainly an interesting time and a fascinating time. And for someone like me who's a bit of a nerd with black politics, I'm sort of very intrigued of what's going to happen in terms of the voice, discussions around treaty sovereignty, climate change, a whole, you know, raft of things that we see come out of the Liberal Party, but the Labor Party, sorry. But the biggest thing, you know, there's been a lot of talk, you know, and politicians talk the talk, but we'll see over the next 3 years whether they can walk the walk. Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks very much.
No worries, my people. I hope you've enjoyed that chat. Uncle Les Malazar talking about Australian politics, the voice to Parliament, deaths in custody, climate change, and our priorities over the next 3 years. It's going to be an interesting time. Make sure you stay tuned to Let's Talk on Triple A, Murray Country.